Good afternoon once again. I'm Tom Lounges, and this is Midwest Beat. You're listening to 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where I'm sure we've got a lot of folks out west listening today because of our special guest. In studio with us, Jamie Harrison, also known as Jamie M. Harrison. And you can look him up online, and you're going to hear some original stuff today. We're going to talk about a series of shows and events that he'll be doing while in town. He just got here. But as I like to do, let's let the music do the talking before anything else. I invite you all to pucker up right now because it's time for a devil's kiss.
Demons held my hand, thinking of so many dead. This distant from the sacred ground, place that I called to dread. See a broken heart and angel with long dark hair, thinking of what she said. She said, wake up now, for it's too late. Too damn good to have time to waste in the ground running. Don't slam on the brakes. Devil's kissing high heel shoes, rolling the dice, cause there's nothing to lose. Only the good die young. My heart's gonna break me down.
Devil's Kiss. New stuff. That is Jamie Harrison, native of East Chicago, Indiana, currently living in Albuquerque, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you left here at the age of 18, but we're going to start way before then. I remember meeting you when you were very little in your father's house, and you were already playing music, as I recall. I think you were like six or seven, so you had started earlier than that, correct?
Yeah, about four, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, of course, very famously, we want to get this out of the way. Your father is Jim Scafish, who is a punk rock pioneer, but he is equally as comfortable as pogoing and body slamming and raving it up in the punk scene as he is with playing Chopin and Mozart and some of those great composers. He's got a wonderful Christmas piano album out that will just blow minds for those that only know him for the punk rock stuff. So you grew up in a very varied environment, musically speaking. It was kind of a buffet of everything, because everything was in your house.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mom really likes a lot of folk music and even different pop things that maybe weren't Dad's cup of tea. So really everything was represented, you know, even old country kind of stuff. So and that version of Devil's Kiss something cool we're doing with the project that's coming out soon, which I know we're going to talk about, but we're doing acoustic versions and we're doing full band versions. So that's kind of the folk rock, Mellencamp, whatever you want to call it, you know, with the kind of rootsy vibe on the tune. But it's a rock song with the whole band version. So it's pretty fun that there's kind of different takes on everything.
Now, that's a song you wrote?
That is, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the songwriting. Last time you were here, you had just a couple under your belt. You'd been playing forever. You've done session work, sideman work. You've done solo performances. But you were kind of just getting ready to start recording I think this is your first album.
This is, yeah.
So you're just getting all that mojo going to be a songwriter, per se, and focus on that. Tell us a little bit about the songwriting side of Jamie Harrison.
It's been a really interesting journey. I mean, it's been there for a long time, but it wasn't necessarily the focus because I kind of got into the whole thing doing sideman work, and really I got back into playing when I was in the military. And I would play in a cover band just kind of because I enjoyed music. And when I wasn't busy being a military policeman, then, you know, I'd be playing in bars and clubs. And it just kind of took off that we were starting to open for bands like Foghat and Skid Row and Blue Oyster Cult and things like that.
In a military band?
Yeah, I was in the military. We had one guy that was kind of one of the wardens at a prison. Another guy worked for Homeland Security. So it was pretty ironic that everyone ended up being cops.
You know. And you're playing with the most decadent of the bands of the 80s,
right?
The kind you might want to arrest at one point.
Yeah, and doing bike rallies.
Yeah, that's cool. Nice little paradox there. Why not choose a career in law enforcement?
You know, it was one of the really at some point in my military career, I was sitting there going, you know, I stopped playing music and I came back to it and I'm playing with people like Blue Oyster Cult and Skid Row. So maybe I should look at it again. And, you know, I jumped out of federal service kind of slowly because I transitioned into civilian federal work and then just got out of it altogether, and really it's much happier at, you know, at this point doing music. That's really what I probably always would have been doing, but you know, I enjoyed the time I spent in the service too. So
now, you were talking about starting at like age 3-4 years old in music. Was this something that you naturally gravitated to because of the environment, or was this something Mom and Dad kind of said you should do this?
I think I gravitated to it, and I definitely always had lessons, so that was always there. But, you know, there were times when I was playing football and things like that that I was going, man, I just want to play football. And thankfully, they kept me on track, still saying, okay, keep practicing, keep doing this. You know, because I think all kids get distracted at some point in high school and have other things in mind. But, I mean, now I talk to so many people who say, man, I used to play piano. I used to play guitar. I wish I would have never stopped. And they just always have that, like, longing look in their eyes, like, I wish.
You know? Right, right.
And what's funny is you can always just start again. It's not ever too late, so.
Now, I'm assuming you started on piano?
I did, yeah.
Most youngsters, because the fingers on the guitar, piano just seems a natural starting point.
Yeah, and it's been. I was talking to my mom about this the other day, and it was kind of funny because I said, you know, I really love piano, but it's like if something's not super engaging. Like if I'm not playing Chick Corea or something, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just kind of like, well, that's cool. But, you know, guitar, I can just kind of noodle anything and it feels fun. And she said, well, you chose guitar, you know, like
right.
piano was always there. And I love both, you know, so.
It's, and you still play both.
Yeah, absolutely. I work with a company called Dexabel, which is a really fine Italian piano company, electric piano, stage piano. And they're, you know, quad core processor. They're like super fancy, state of the art stuff. So, but it sounds fabulous. You know, I'll be playing that this weekend at the Record Bin. So,
okay. Well, let's talk about some of the shows you're doing. Tomorrow, Saturday, you're going to be in Three Oaks, Michigan at the Acorn as the special guest of M&R Rush. And those guys were in here last week, wasn't it, Jose? M&R Rush? Yeah, they were in here last week. We did a show with them. I had them on some other, they were on some other radio stations out there promoting it. These guys have been together since 1973, so that's longer than you've been alive.
A little bit, yeah.
So they're excited. I sent them some of your music, and I know Marty said, I can't wait to meet this guy. You know, this is great. So what do you got in store? Because you're doing a one-man show. Will you be doing just guitar? Will you be doing piano guitar?
There's going to be a little bit of everything. I mean, I'm going to bring a keyboard, so there will be some keyboard stuff I can do, acoustic guitar like we're doing this, and then there's a really fun show that I do that features a looper and an amp modeler. So that's,
okay, you lost me there. That sounds like another language.
So I'm a techie, so all the really cool tech stuff. If you check me out on Facebook, you can see all the companies I work with, and I do product demos for people like Bose and Headrush and folks like that, Boss, Keeley, Wampler. But tech has been such it's a great time to be a guitar player because the tech is crazy. But so if you've heard someone like Jack Johnson or maybe KT Tungstale, they use what's called a looper, so you can record something live, a couple seconds to maybe a minute or something, and throw down, you know, progression, like if you're going to do like... And then you loop that forever so you can just... Just play over it.
So you can accompany yourself.
Yeah, so it's really cool because you do it yourself.
So it's not cheating.
Yeah, it's not cheating. It's still live. It's not recorded. Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty cool, and... the Headrush that I have, it has amp modeling built in, so you can plug in directly to a console and sound like you're through a Marshall stack. So it doesn't just sound like a clean acoustic guitar. It mm-hmm. sounds, it's somewhere between full band and acoustic me and my guitar. So if you're doing something, you know, you can really shred and do Van Halen kind of stuff and interesting space effects. And
wow.
It's a pretty fun show, and like I said, I can bridge that gap of not being just, you know, a guy with his guitar and hang with the rockers like M&R Rush.
There you go. Well, we got the show tomorrow at the Acorn, and you're also going to be performing a few other dates around here. On June 22nd, for instance, you'll be at the Highland Music and Market. You'll be working as a support with probably the same kind of show with the Uptown Dance Band. Andy Sutton will be there to run sound. I'll be in D.C. I won't be able to see you, but Andy Sutton will take good care of you. And then we've got you. These are public performances, and he's also got some other ones that we can tell you about. July 4th, you'll be spending Independence Day with the son of Muddy Waters.
Oh, wow.
Joseph Mojo Morganfield and the Manish Boys will be closing out Thursday, July 4th at the Highland Fest. Bridget Purdy is flying in from L.A. She is a former backup singer with Paul Rogers. She has sang with The Who and some other groups. Bringing her in from L.A., Corey Dennison, regular Buddy Guys legends. And, of course, you're going to be opening up 4th of July. So that's a great lineup there. And I'm looking forward to one day bringing your entire group or having you with an entire group because I just think that would be monstrous. So July 4th there. July 6th, a couple days later, on Saturday, you'll be at the Bulldog Park in Crown Point with Mr. Funny Man, one of the top drawing bands of Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland. They actually play for people like Mark Wahlberg and Jenny McCarthy and people like that. Man Cow's had them out. So, again, you're on stage with some really good regional talent here in Northwest Indiana. But there's a famous photo that I like to post every once in a while when we're going to have you on. It's got you smack dab in the middle of Jeff Bridges and T-Bone Burnett. And you're in a white, like a dinner jacket, you're playing piano, and the guys are on either side of you with guitars. What a dream gig that must have been. Jeff Bridges and T-Bone Burnett. Now, you were brought in as a session guy there, sideman. What was that?
Yeah, so I actually was brought into MD, the show, so musical director.
Wow.
And the band that backed them up was my band. So I was kind of the taskmaster. I had to make sure everyone learned, you know.
So you get to boss them around a little? Yeah. How cool is that?
And it was great. I mean, we had a practice the afternoon of in the hotel room with, you know, Jeff and T-Bone. And they were actually playing my guitars. T-Bone was playing a 61 archtop Gibson that I own. And then Jeff was playing my purple Iconic, which is with the purple.
That's the one you played at the record bin last time.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember everybody said, "Ooh, look at that guitar." That is a cool guitar. Wow. So does that kind of stuff happen a lot?
It does. You know, thankfully, I've gotten some really cool calls to play with people, whether they be country, jazz, smooth jazz, you know, different pop folks, lots of people with Grammys. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've done a show with Nathan East. We did some stuff with George Dukas, who he had some hits in the 90s as a country artist. And
he wrote for people, didn't he?
Yeah, he's written a lot of hits for Sarah Evans, George Jones, Garth Brooks, Gary Allen, Randy Rogers Band. He writes with Radney Foster often. Okay. So, and if you listen to country, you know every one of those names.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you'll know some of them. So,
wow. Now, how did you get into this elite group, I guess you would say? Because these are big names. These are talented people. These are success stories. And you're a young guy. You move out there from Northwest Indiana, of all places, and you find yourself in the company of giants here, and they seem to obviously respect you enough to say, well, you can tell us what to do. We're going to borrow your guitars. We're going to take your endorsements and your suggestions on how to make this show work. How long was that coming, and how did you get to that point?
You know, I think everything is always a work in progress. It's kind of, you just have to always show up ready for game time, a good attitude, you know, good equipment, of course. I mean, the equipment wasn't always as good as it is now, but you know, it's really outstanding now, and just being able to you know, rise to the occasion. If someone calls you for something, you know, you do the best job you can with it. You try to be positive, even if things aren't ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people tend to respect that, and it spreads. And when we did the Nathan East show, it was a film festival that was a tribute to him, and he was going to participate as well. So we did a lot of songs that he played on, and we kind of paid tribute to him. And then he came up on stage and played some songs out with his brother, is actually his bass player. His other brother plays guitar. Marcel is a respected producer as well. But the producers of that show, they brought me in. I think I was doing like one song or something, like a supplemental keyboard thing. And then it just kind of said, "Hey, can you do this?" "Yeah, I can do that." "Hey, can you do this?" And it's just, I ended up playing on like 15 songs at that point. So.
You've got a song that you brought in that we're going to debut here. And you were talking about working with film and doing things like that. This is a song that you did not write, but tell us the story behind it, because you're singing it, you're playing it, and it's for a special purpose.
Yeah, a friend of mine, J. David Peters, he's a songwriter, and he, you know, he gets things placed in film and TV and that sort of deal. And his website, I believe it's johndavidpeters.com, you can find some of his work. But, yeah, he had heard me play on some things and heard some of my songwriting, and ended up hiring me to do a really high-quality, you know, recording of one of his songs for a movie that was coming up, for a Billy the Kid movie. It's called Don't Take Me for a Hero. And it was done in my home studio, guitar and vocal.
So this is actually a demo.
Yeah,
but it's like a finished product. I was listening to this all morning, and I'm like, yeah, this is incredible.
So it was kind of like, you know, I get a recording of it. And it's just kind of him, you know, strumming and singing, you know. So it's a full structure, you know, a full performance. And then he just wants something really clean. So it's like we could leave it here as like an unplugged piece, mm-hmm. or it could be something that's just kind of a calling card, like, okay, like, let's go ahead and purchase this song, sort of a deal. And then, you know, we're going to do, you know, maybe James Taylor wants to do it or something like that. Mm-hmm. So Nashville kind of has a lot of this sort of thing where you have songwriters who maybe don't go and tour on their own, but they hire someone to do a full production demo that is, you know, stands on its own.
So have you sent this out already?
That's, you know,
That's on his end.
Yeah, that's
okay,
on
you
his
just
end.
Made it for him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we actually won a big award in New Mexico, Song of the Year for the New Mexico Music Awards.
So. All right. Well, this is it. Let's check it out. New music, Jamie Harrison featured.
You think I'm a hero, 'cause people know my name. I'm not that man, I don't play a hero's game. Life's been hard, a fight to get by. Right or wrong, one has to survive. Don't take me for a hero, take me for a man. I'm no one's savior, I just do what I am. Don't put your faith in me, don't set me way up on high. If I said I was a hero, well, that was just a lie. No one to watch my back, no one tall at my side. When life gets tough, I just saddle up and ride. I trust nobody, no one should trust me. All I believe in is what I can see. Don't take me for a hero, take me for a man. I'm no one's savior, I just do what I am. Don't put your faith in me, don't set me way up on high. If I said I was a hero, well, that was just a lie. Well, if I said I was a hero, well, that was just a lie.
That's Don't Call Me a Hero.
Don't Take Me for a Hero.
Don't Take Me for a Hero. Brand new music. How long ago did you record that?
Sometime last year, maybe mid last year.
You know, the thing that that song in particular, you hear the robustness of your voice. I love your voice. It's got that timbre, that warmth that we hear or actually haven't heard since someone maybe like a Kris Kristofferson. You've got that old kind of sound.
That's kind of what I aim for. I mean, I think when I was younger, I was trying to think, because there's a lot of people who maybe had that thinner Justin Timberlake sound. Mm-hmm. And I said, why don't I sound like that? But it's like once I kind of figured out what to do with it, it became pretty cool.
Now, we opened up the show with Devil's Kiss, and that's your song.
Yes.
And you are working on a brand new full-length album?
EP.
EP. So how many? Six songs? Five songs?
So there'll be, of the new stuff, there's going to be three new originals, band version, and acoustic version. So that's six. We'll have Maybe I'll Write That Down.
Okay.
Which is my first single with the piano song, and then Purple Rain will also be on there.
Okay. We're going to get to both of those a little later. We've got those, well, at least Purple Rain recording. Maybe you'll do Write That Down live. I don't know. We'll see. You got your guitar. We're going to make you use it. We're going to put you to work here. Jamie Harrison is my guest. And again, he is playing a lot of shows while he's in town. You're here, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
4 weeks.
4 weeks. Yeah. Extended vacation.
Mom and Dad are happy. They get to see me.
All right. You know, it's got to be great when you have Mom and Dad and you don't have to worry about hotel accommodations.
Right.
You know you're going to get breakfast in the morning because Mom's going to cook because she misses you. And, you know, you and Dad are going to hang out and you're going to work on new songs together. Of course, Jim Scafish is the dad in question here. And this is Father's Day. So it's kind of a great time for you to be home.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's always cool. Like, I think last time I was here, one of the last times, I actually got to come home on Mom's birthday. So,
okay.
You know, that's always great because, you know, when you – a lot of times I'm not even home. I'm just traveling somewhere. Mm-hmm. So nobody sees me on any important days. But we've
timed it well again.
We did.
All right. Well, we're going to make sure that timing works very well. Let's bring on somebody on the phone here. Bring them up. Hello. How are you?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can. Jamie just got a big smile on his face. Jim Scafish joining us. We're here talking to Jamie Harrison, his son. It is a Father's Day weekend. And Jim, I just saw the wonderful picture of John Carpenter and you and Jamie in the studio. And tell me a little bit about this new project. You and Jamie banter with me here about this new album, this new EP.
Well, it's really thrilling to do it because, first and foremost, the songs are really outstanding. So in other words, the songs are really good. Jamie had recorded the band tracks in New Mexico. Then he's coming here, and he's going to be doing the vocals and some additional instruments. So we have a great chemistry because I've worked with John Carpenter before. He's a delight to work with. Obviously, Jamie and I have a fantastic chemistry. So the three of us were in the studio for the first time yesterday, together in this project, reviewing the tracks. And then he's going to be doing the vocals and getting these done. What I think is really important whenever I listen to a song, I'm looking for universal consciousness. In other words, I'm looking for a song that connects into the oneness of all humanity. You know, whether it's a certain style, whether it's a certain genre, but that it speaks to the universal condition of what we're going through. And I really believe that all the songs that Jamie has written for this absolutely have that. And so they're just delightful songs to work on. So it's been just fantastic. I mean, it's great to be a part of helping to make his dreams come true.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jamie, you grew up with Jim teaching you so much about music. At this point, you have done so much on your own. Do you still sometimes say, hey, Dad, listen to this tune. What do you think? How can I fix it? Or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really cool because a lot of people have parents who are just kind of cheerleaders that will always say, oh, it's great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at a certain point, you know, we had a conversation. It's like, hey, we're never just going to tell you it's good if it's not, because that doesn't help you if you really want to do this. And, you know, he's so talented with instruments and with songwriting and production and everything. So it's all these concepts. If I brought something and you know, maybe you think it's good, and then, you know, it's like, well, you might want to look at that again. And it's every time it's always right. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, even if I like consult other people and go, what do you think? You know, and they say the exact same thing if they know what they're talking about. So
you put a lot of stock in what he says.
It's a great resource. And, you know, it's like, I don't know what I would do, you know, if I didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been great to learn from someone so, you know, knowledgeable.
Well, you're working with John Carpenter as well, and John's been here many times, and I've known him forever, and I agree with both of you that he is just a remarkable studio talent, as well as a great guitar player himself.
Yes.
What's it like to work with John, and what has he offered on any of these as far as suggestions?
You know, I've been connected with John via Facebook for a while, and it's been, you know, cool and friendly, and then This is the first time I've actually got to meet him in person and,
okay.
and kind of see the studio. And I was like, okay, I've seen all this gear, you know, wow, okay, cool. Like, as soon as I walked in, I'm like, oh, cool, you know. He's just easygoing, super easy to flow with. Really cool points. Like if he just says, well, what if we try this? And it's like, right. It's not like, let's do the Phil Collins compression on the uh-huh. snare drum or something, you know, you know, it's pretty, we're all on the same page, which is really nice.
Well, one of the things I've always admired about his studio and, is the fact that the first thing I ever heard of there was Eric Lambert and the Laughing Gnomes. And I thought, what a warmth, what an organic sound he's got. You sometimes stereos are so cold and clinical mm-hmm. and digital and all that. John, everything I've ever heard out of there, whether it's Jeff Sarver, Eric Lambert, or his own group, they all have that organic warmth, that sound that just makes you feel warm and fuzzy. And that seems like with that last song that we had just played earlier, Devil's Kiss, and also the Hero song, that is your style, that large voice, that warmth, that cuddle up. You're singing to that person. You're not singing to an audience. You're singing to every individual listener. And Jim, I think that's what you were kind of referring to when you're talking about the universal consciousness, that everyone can personally relate to those songs.
Yeah, it's exactly what I was talking to and speaking of. And I think it's important, you know, going back to the point that you said about being honest with somebody. You know, there's two different kinds of honesty. And there's the horrible one where people use honesty as a weapon.
Right.
Like, say, they don't like your haircut and they tell you it looks horrible, right, to make you feel bad. And then there's the productive type of honesty where you really do care about helping somebody to do better. And that's the thing that with, you know, Glenda and I, whenever we're working with Jamie musically, it's always honest but completely supportive. Because when you're doing the artistic process, and all of us have been there, it's easy to lose your center. You know, to get wrapped up into whether it's too much emotion, too much insecurity, and not being sure. And it happens to every artist, no matter how famous they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so having an objective viewpoint that is supportive is really the key. Because all of us who have been in music, you know, have been attacked at one time or another by somebody who claims they're being honest, but it's just mean-spirited. So it's always that sense of trying to help Jamie to be the best he can be, not being overly critical. And I think that Jamie has, you know, a tremendous amount of talent. And I agree with you what you're saying about his singing. It really does connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
It connects. And that's what you're looking for in a vocalist. Because, you know, one of the problems that, say, you might have with certain classical singers is that they have the technique, but they can't create the emotive experience of connecting emotionally. Conversely, a lot of pop singers who are not real well trained might have a lot of emotion, but they're cracking, their technique is bad, they can't sing on pitch, they're straining. So I feel Jamie is combining the best of both. You know, he's a trained vocalist, he has the discipline to sing correctly, and he can really connect emotionally. And that's what counts. You know, when people are listening, you want them to connect. And I agree with you that his voice sounded fantastic on the Hero song.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, we were talking earlier. I don't know if you were tuned into the beginning of the show, if you were listening, but we were talking about how he started at such a young age.
At three.
Like 3 years old. And a little later, he said, you know, he wanted to play football and do this stuff. And like any kid, you kind of want to skip practice and do that. But he said you guys kept him on track. But it didn't seem like it was a forced thing. It seemed like you were just there. So, you know, maybe you should keep this going. What was it like to actually, as his dad, as his musical mentor, as his mm-hmm. instructor, you wore a lot of hats in connection with his talent. What was he like as a student? What was he like as a not just your son, but as someone who was coming up a prodigy?
Well, he was great. And you know, where I'm coming from, and Jamie knows it, you know, firsthand, is that I think my basic viewpoint would be the highest standards only. In other words, it's not okay to say, well, you can flop through the song, or, you know, you can kind of shout it, and, you know, if it doesn't, isn't on pitch, it's okay. It was always from a very high standard. And I think that Jamie grew up with that. He was used to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and at times I think it's a little bit hard when you're a teenager and you're wanting to have fun And I'm like, but you have to play your classical first, you know. And so it was kind of cool, you know, we can do blues, we can do rock, we can do funk, we can do classical, we can do jazz, we can do everything, you know, we can do anything you want, but the standards have to be high. Mm-hmm. And I think especially as a child, you know, you can be mesmerized by pop culture. Like you could see somebody on TV and they've got this fantastic production and it's easy to be mesmerized by it. And I tried to always take him beyond that, even from when he was a kid, and say, look, listen to the quality of this. Is it really delivered correctly? To give him the highest standards. And I think it was wonderful mm-hmm. because, you know, sometimes Jamie was exploring and he'd teach himself how to play things. I'll never forget when he was a kid and he learned Great Balls of Fire by Jerry Lee Lewis, note to note, right? And it was really a fun arrangement. I put it together for him and, you know, got the note by note thing, and he played it at school and everybody loved it. And it was a great moment. And it's that kind of thing where, you know, in music, a lot of times you have this kind of tribal sort of thing happening, which I've never been a part of. Like classical people hate rock because they think it's beneath them,
right?
You know, and then jazz people think pop is no good. And I've looked at it from a completely different point of view, that there's validity in absolutely every style. Every style. It's right. all a great melting pot. And Jamie vibed with that really, really well. And like even now, he can play anything.
Yeah,
he can play anything.
Well,
and I'm
just
not
mentioning
just
how he
you know.
Can play the smooth jazz, the old school jazz, the country, and he's at home with all of that. Jamie, you said you're still playing Great Balls of Fire?
Yeah, I still do that. Yeah.
Wow. You don't like
the
piano on fire,
do you? Yeah, it was a great moment.
Because
it's like, what were you when you did Great Balls of Fire, Jamie? I think you were like, was it like 8, 7 or 8?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah, he's really little, right? And he's sitting there, you know, pounding the piano out, and I'm thinking, oh, Jerry Lee would be proud of this, you know, because it was a note-by-note thing, and he played it really, really well. But I think that, you know, when you're doing music, everybody has their own way of relating to it, right?
Right.
But as Jamie's mentor, I was sort of like, we're going to learn everything. So it was never like, let's look down upon pop and only look up to classical. It was look up to everything, learn everything. And so then that way, it could be, you know, somebody on a street corner pounding a guitar, screaming a protest song,
mm-hmm.
just as good as Beethoven doing a symphony, or just as valid, you know. I mean, good is sort of subjective, right?
Right, right.
But it was always kind of like whatever it is that he would feel. And I think it was important, you know, that I wanted to give him the tools, but I didn't want him to become anything other than who he was. Okay. So it wasn't like, you know, oh, well, you know, there's, we're doing punk and we're doing new wave and you have to do that. Or, you know, it's kind of like he had to find what he wanted to do. And I think that's wonderful because he has a very well-developed identity of his own. And that's important. You have to have that as an artist.
Now, one of the things that that Jamie is exploring right now, and you, as you mentioned, Jamie, you're starting to explore the songwriting side of your is that your left brain, your right brain? I don't know which one it is. But you're starting to really reach out and delve into that. But you have long done covers, as we mentioned, Jerry Lee Lewis. Now, that was spot on. You've done some unique arrangements, interpretations, if you will, of certain songs. One that we're going to play next is your treatment of Purple Rain. And as I recall, you played the purple guitar on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great treatment. Now, everyone knows Purple Rain, and in fact, when we did a piece reflecting on Prince, Jim, you were there on the show with me, so I know you're a big fan of Prince.
Sure.
Jamie, you're a big fan of Prince. So let's play it, and we're going to talk about what you brought to this song and why in right after this. Check it out.
Song. I never
some kind of friend. Yeah. Baby, I can never steal you from another.
Steal you from another.
It's such a shame a friendship had to win. Purple rain.
Purple Rain. There's the thunder.
Short version.
A lot of guitar soloing in there. Now, you gave that song its separate identity. That is definitely the Jamie Harrison version. was it your dad, Jim, that introduced you to Prince's music, or was it something that, because you were of the age when you were there when Prince was the hot item?
I think I always just liked purple. Like somehow I just gravitated to purple, and then
so it was the color.
And then people were like, "Well, you know, who you ought to check out."
Okay, all right, Jim. As a Prince fan, what do you think of Jamie's treatment there?
Well, I think there was the objective of it was to say, here's a great song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then add something new to the narrative, to the storyline, that would really make it special. And I think he achieved that. In other words, it's not, you know, trying to just replicate exactly what Prince did, but to say, be reverent to the song, add something special to it. I think what he did with it is fantastic. I love it. I just love it.
Now, that's going to be on the new EP.
Mm-hmm.
The band there that you're playing with, is that your band in Albuquerque? Who is the backing? Who is the harmony vocals? What were those folks?
So the other singer, that's Rebecca R. Scott, and she's an artist that I've supported for a couple of years. We played in Puerto Rico together. We've done, you know, New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, so kind of a regional Southwest sort of deal, and international with Puerto Rico. And she just did a fantastic job mm-hmm. on that.
She did.
Really soulful singer, and quick too. So that was awesome. And the band, so rhythm section from New York and Chicago. Guy Lagerway, who's originally from Long Island, who lives in Albuquerque now. He actually is playing a bass, Federa Basses, who they have like $10,000 basses. They offered that bass and another bass to Victor Wooten like 30 years ago.
Wow.
And Vic chose the other one, and Guy got this one. But Guy and Victor are friends, and he's done Victor Wooten's, you know, bass getaway camp and that kind of stuff. Used to be a session player in New York. Just a fantastic guy, really sweet guy too, and his playing is phenomenal. And Rich Reed, who was a staple in Chicago for a long time, I think. Grew up on the South Side, really just groove drummer. He's played with, you know, all kinds of acts,
mm-hmm.
You know, nationally, internationally. And he actually did some work with my dad in the 80s. So.
Okay. So was that the connection, Jim? Did you refer him or?
I didn't refer him to Rich. What happened is that they met each other in New Mexico, and then, you know, Rich realized who I was, and then they bonded and connected. But, you know, and then Rich and I have communicated since then. And Rich is just a fantastic power groove. And it was a great story because when he was going to play for me, right, and that band never really panned out, but he was playing the drums. And I said, okay, we're going to put on the drum machine, and you're going to play with the drum machine, and then I'm going to turn the drum machine volume down so you won't be able to hear it. Then I'm going to bring it in like a couple of minutes later and see if you're still on beat. He was 100% on beat, which any drummer would know was an amazing feat. In other words, so his rhythm didn't fluctuate at all. So it's wow. Like he's that good, you know, at those kind of things. He's an amazing drummer, just fantastic. And you could hear on Purple Rain that the power he brings to the track is atomic.
Now, do they play with you on a regular basis since he's not based there?
You know, we have been doing a lot of stuff lately. We've been doing these original songs out in New Mexico.
So the tracks that you sent to John Carpenter and your dad, they were done with these same guys?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's your core band.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once this EP is done and you're ready to start hitting the road, which it looks like you're very ready, is that going to be your touring band?
You know, we'll see what happens when okay. that time is there. Rich has played with, like, the Staples Sisters and so... Sophie B. Hawkins and a couple other folks. So I know he's in demand with a lot of folks. And even in Santa Fe, where he lives, there's a lot of, you know, Grammy Award winners and jazz artists who are just kind of tucked away in there, and they all know Rich. I mean, mm-hmm. like, Rich is kind of a house session guy at the studios in New Mexico, kind of the best kept secret, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll just see what happens when the time comes. There's a lot of great folks, though, available that I use, so there's plenty of people to choose from. So,
all right, Jim. Before we let you go, I want to ask you one more thing, and that is about your current projects. I know you're reissuing a lot of the Skafish original stuff, and you did a wonderful Christmas album, which I am still waiting for Volume 2. What's new in your world, and what can we expect coming forward?
Well, here's what's going on. My first album, the Skafish debut album, which was released in 1980, as most people already know, I legally secured the rights back to it, and I'm right on the verge of releasing it via a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. So the record has been remastered. It sounds unbelievably better. I was really shocked at how much better it sounds, yet it's still the exact same record. There's no weird, updated kind of tricks or that sort of thing. So that's going on. Okay. As far as the holiday albums, I have two new holiday albums scored and composed, and I'm hoping to get into the studio to do those. And then beyond that, re-releasing all of the old Skafish catalog, everything that's been out there, and working on new music too, which I hope, you know, will further what I did before. You know, not just recycling it and saying, well, we'll try and stay in that pocket. But I really hope to go with it further. I would say, if you're saying what word would describe it, probably, hopefully, more provocative.
Okay. So the songs, you say the full Skafish catalog. We're talking about even like the Where is James Bond stuff that you were doing in the 90s and the early 2000s?
There's several albums that were released before. You may know this, but when I did my second album for IRS Records, they rejected it because it was too controversial. And
really?
Keep in mind, this was a record company that was considered the most progressive record company on earth at the time, or one of them. And they hated it because it was too controversial. It was too shocking. There were songs about, you know, there was a song about a sex change. There was a song about a home invasion. They hated it. So that's going to be released. I'm going to put that out. There's also the Conversation album. You know, that's, we're looking to get that out there.
Right.
And everything that you've heard, you know, in other words, plus there's other albums that no one has ever heard. So we're looking to get all of it out there, and hopefully, you know, we'll do what we can to get everything out there.
Excellent. Now, when are you going to start with the Christmas album? Will it be out in time for this holiday season?
Probably not. I would like it to be, but I've got to get the first album going, and that's really a full-time deal, you know, being able to get that out. I mean, I'm hoping to get that out at ASAP, but probably not this year. But I am practicing those, you know, getting those ready, and we've got two records ready to go. And if you like the first one, you'll love these.
It's
built
amazing.
On that concept.
I love it. I can't play that enough over the holidays.
Oh my God, thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you.
Even the Christmas shows that we do, like the live shows with other artists, I use that as the between set music because it just blows people away. They're like, I know this song, but I don't know it this way. And you play it so brilliantly. Now, will you be, this is for either of you, will you be doing anything together as far as performing? Jamie, are you going to sit in on any of your dad's projects? And Jim, will you come out and play with him?
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. I think we'll definitely do things. We'll just, you know what it is? There's so many things that are kind of unfolding right now and just in development that I certainly, yeah, I mean, we've done so much together. I'd love to. I'm sure we will.
I would love to see the two of you on stage. Jamie, you with your guitars, and Jim, you with the piano, and just see what would happen. Just throw you in a room and say, create. I just think it would be brilliant. And hopefully maybe one of the shows, and he's in the town, if not this time, but maybe next time we can get you together on a stage and just blow people's minds.
Well, God, thank you. Like I said, I mean, I'm just, you know, so excited to see Jamie's dreams unfolding, to be a part of it. It really is exciting to see your kid do what they want to do and to support it. And that's a fantastic feeling to support it because, you know, it's just great to see that happening. It really makes me happy.
And, of course, he's keeping it in the family business.
Exactly. It's a family business. And you know, it's fantastic. But it's great. You know, I think as a parent, I think if you can see your kids do what they want to do and support them doing it, that's a really fantastic gift. So I'm so grateful for Jamie and everything that we share. You know, okay. It's fantastic.
In closing, I just want to make two more comments, and that is when I had Stuart Copeland on the show here a couple of weeks ago, I dropped your name, and he says, he's still doing it? I said, yeah, he's still doing it. And he says, give him my regards. So Stuart said everyone from his camp sends you regards. He totally remembers working with you.
Oh, yeah, we had a great relationship. We had a great time doing this. I mean, it was wonderful working with the police. It was really a fantastic experience. And like I said, they were unbelievably nice. When our bass guitar broke, Sting let us use his bass. I mean, that's the type of camaraderie that you need in a touring situation because anything can happen.
Right.
So, I mean, it was fantastic working with them. Nothing but incredible, incredible memories.
And Miles is living in his castle in France somewhere, but semi-retired.
Right.
But I also just picked up a copy of, as you know, I got a vinyl record store, and I have, I just got a copy of Urga Music War, which I am not going to put on the racks. That is so hard to find, an original copy, and I've got it, and I'm going to be playing as a spotlight album coming up real soon on the internet station. But I just wanted to throw that out there, that it is still there if you can find it. And when you release or re-release all the Skatefish stuff, I would love to have you do like a release party at the store, come in, sign copies, whatever you want to do. I am 100% behind what you're doing because, as you know, I was a fan back then. I'm still a fan now.
Oh, I appreciate it. We'll have to, that would be great, you know, and like I said, we'll see how it all unfolds. But I mean, it's always so nice connecting with you.
All right. Jim, thank you so much and happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. Jamie Harrison in studio with us. That was Jim Skatefish, his dad, joining us on this Father's Day presentation, which we timed perfectly well to have him in town. He'll be tomorrow at Three Oaks, Michigan at the Acorn Theater with M&R Rush, 7:30 p.m. showtime. Jamie's also in town on July 4th at the Highland 4th of July Fest. He'll be going on about 1:15-ish. That is the Blues Day for Independence Blues, I guess we'll call it. 2 days later, he is at the Crown Point Bulldog Park, and that's July 6th. He'll be there with Mr. Funny Man Band. We've got him at the Highland Music and Market June 22nd. I guess I did those out of order, but that's okay. He'll be with the Uptown Dance Band. Now, you are also doing some other appearances. You're going to be doing different music clinics and things. So give us a little shout-out on that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've been working with a lot of people know Bose Audio as a
speaker
home audio.
People.
Yeah. They have a professional line, which is really outstanding. Everything you already know from the home line, which is great quality, same deal. So I'll be doing three clinics for Bose at Guitar Centers. So June 21st, Guitar Center Villa Park, 5 p.m. June 28th, Guitar Center Naperville, 5 p.m. And June 29th, Hobart, Indiana, also known as Maryville. Mm-hmm. It's right on the border here by the mall, 1 p.m. on June 29th.
Excellent. So. I hope I can make that one.
Yeah, that's right in the backyard. Right?
Yeah, it is. I just got done buying some stuff there. I just picked up some new, what did I just buy there? Spotlight? I can't remember.
And
I got a bunch of stuff.
You saw my buddy Michael Young there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did. He was at the counter. Oh, I know what I was buying. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we used to work there actually in like 2005
together.
So Michael actually, so Dad bought me a Yamaha keyboard mm-hmm. when I was like 16 or something. And Mike was a Motif guy, Yamaha Motif. It was a keyboard. And he would actually show me how to do a lot of, like, power user stuff on that because I was, like, 18 or 19 or something like that. And he's like, do you know how to do this? And just I just soak it up. And I still do all – I have, you know, the last one they did, and I'm still doing all that stuff. So
wow.
He's got a cool project, too, the Nevada project, I think.
I haven't heard it. I mean, I've heard him play for years with different groups in the area, but I'm not sure what he's doing. Is it an original project?
You know, that was stuff I don't even know what he's doing now. I know I heard some tunes he did in, like, 06. And they were, like, even I still send him, like, a voice note sometimes. I sing him, like, part of the chorus. I'm like, where is it? Like, how do I find it? And he's like, I think it's on my, what is it, like, Bandcamp or, like that. You can stream it.
One of those obsolete sites now.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah, it's
MySpace.
Yeah, check out my MySpace. I think it's on his SoundCloud.
Okay.
But, yeah, he does some great stuff, and I absolutely love that dude. He's been a good friend for at least 10 years.
Let's play another song. You have your guitar. I want to make you use it. You got something new from the EP, too?
Sure. This one's called Novocaine.
Oh, I like that.
Away, and I don't believe in fairy
something in my eyes. And I don't believe in angels' ways. I don't believe in hell. I'm overcame the candy coated shell. Can't explain a child's ride. Sometimes love slips away. And I don't believe in fairy tales. Something in my eyes. I don't believe in angels' wings. I don't believe in hell. Coated shell and all my empty fascinations. Love can be means to me. All these wasted lies the paper finds. Potentially you and me. The devil makes real, baby. Well, maybe tomorrow. Sometimes love slips away. And I don't believe in fairy tales. Something in my eyes. Something in my eyes. I said something in my eyes. Oh yeah, Novocaine in a candy coat.
Novocaine, Jamie M. Harrison, and new stuff from the EP. What's the target date? I know you're here, you're working on it with your dad and John Carpenter over at Thunderclap. Do you have a target date?
In a perfect world, I think it's going to be soon. I mean, actual date, it'll be this year.
Okay.
I mean, we're putting the finishing touches on it, vocal, all that stuff. I know we'll have at least, a single out within a few months, but, the whole thing should be out this year.
Now, you mentioned you're doing two versions, acoustic and full band. What is your preference? I mean, you wrote the songs, so you hear them a certain way. Do you prefer them in the more acoustic-y, organic way, or do you like getting a little more bombastic with them?
I mean, what's weird is I really like both. I mean, I grew up when Unplugged was on MTV.
Okay.
So, we all know Layla with the, you'll hear XRT or somebody play, the rocked out version, and then you see,
Right.
And I grew up with, you just do both. And it's been really fun. They're different. It's not like you hear it and it's like, oh, it's exactly the same, but just less stuff.
Will the EP have both versions on it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you'll have six songs total, but 12 tracks.
Yeah, it's six would be the new stuff. Then we've got Purple Rain. Maybe I'll write that down. So it'd
okay,
be
so eight,
eight
songs yeah. on the EP. It's almost yeah. a full-length album.
Yeah, almost.
But if you add acoustic and electric, now you get 16 tracks.
Right.
So are you doing one of each, or are you just doing a few selected full band?
Just on the new stuff, because maybe I'll write that down as a piano song already.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. And then, so it's really four original songs plus one, and then here's some acoustic versions of the new stuff. So.
Okay. Now, maybe I'll write that down. We're going to get to that off CD in just a few minutes. But when you wrote that, that was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're writing, I'm assuming, some of the newer stuff like Novocaine and Devil's Kiss. Those are more recent songs that you've written.
Yes.
So how have you evolved as a songwriter? Critique yourself here. Young Jamie versus now.
It comes a lot easier, I think. One of the things like like Dad was talking about, is with that universal, something that people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that there's this concept of like art rock or something where people are trying to be cute and clever and not just saying technical, but they're just trying to be out there. And it's like you're either out there or you're not, you know. And it's just one of those things that okay, what's the concept of this? So now it's like I can strum something and then I can go, okay, what does that make me feel? Or, you know, try to just capture a moment real quick and then, you know, at least get rolling on a concept. So maybe I'll write that down. It took a long time to actually – I mean, I had 90% of it done, and the last 10% I was like, well, I don't know. And Dad was saying, you know, it needs a bridge. You need a bridge. And then, like, one day it's just – the bridge came, and it was like, okay, there it is.
Okay. Now, when you're writing, is it the melodies that come or the lyrical content? Are you a lyricist first, musician second, or vice versa?
You know, I try to I'm big into journaling, and I try to like write a concept. Dad used to talk about, I think Winston Churchill said, a concept of a speech should fit on a matchbook. So like, it doesn't matter if you got to give an hour speech, but what you want people to take from it should fit on a matchbook. And
I've never heard that. That's really wise.
Yeah, and it's like, what do you want people to get from what you're doing? And so, you know, is it a happy song? Is it complicated? You know, because relationships, people in my generation are all complicated.
Right. Seems and like. You seem to write a lot about relationships. Mm-hmm. That seems to be your go-to.
Yeah. It's funny because, it's anything that's powerful, I think, can inspire you. You know, that's where that stuff comes from. But, yeah, sometimes I'll just write a phrase. And, like, one of the other songs on the album is called All of the Love Songs. And I think there was a meme that I saw, and it said, and suddenly all of the love songs were about you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there, you know, there was somebody I was with that I looked over and I said, yeah, that's about right, you know. And because some people say, you know, it's all about who you think about when you sing love songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that tells you, you know, who you're into. But
all right. Let's play. Maybe I'll write that down. Again, when was this written?
This would have been written...
4 years?
2009 or 2010, somewhere
okay,
around there.
So quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Do you play it the same now as it, we're going to hear it on the recording, or have you let it
piano,
evolve?
Yes.
Okay.
I think one time we did a band version, but you know, I like it as just a piano piece. So even if I'm with a loud band, it's like, you know, like Lionel Richie does all his hits, he's
right.
dancing, and then he goes and sits down at the piano. Another song, he'll strum a guitar. And then he goes back to doing, you know.
That this kind of reminds me of something that you could sell to, like, Ben Folds or something like that.
Sure.
You know, I think this is a strong song. We're going to talk a little more about it after we listen to it. This is Maybe I'll Write This Down. You should write it down, too.
I've got no notebook with a list of songs inside. I got a song for every thought. It ain't hard to find the words I'm thinking of, 'cause songs already said them, I'm sure. Where the words to say, maybe they're trapped inside my mind when I'm dreaming. I spent it all my life with you, and I'm sorry, baby, I'll write that down. 3 a.m. I'm searching like a fool, but I just can't seem to find the words to say. You know they never really come out right. I guess I'll have to write them this time. where the words to say. Maybe they're trapped inside my mind when I'm dreaming. I spent it all my life with you, and I'm sorry. Baby, write them down. Well, sometimes a man don't know the words to say. I fake it the best I can. I know it might have took a little time. I finally found my words. Oh, baby, oh, baby, yeah. I'm just a singer of the man's songs, yeah. I'm never really here to write the words down. Oh, it's hard to find the words trapped inside this band. With you gone, baby, write them down. With you gone, baby, write them down.
Going back a number of years there, young Jamie Harrison, and maybe I'll write that down. You said 2009-ish that was done?
Yeah, 09, 10, somewhere in there.
Recorded in Albuquerque.
At Shepherd Studio. My friend Chuck Lucero actually engineered that.
Wow. Now, let's talk about that song. That was one of your early original songs. What inspired that? We were talking about that you write about a lot of relationships, and that's kind of started it. That's the pinnacle of the assault of your songwriting there.
That tune is, I think it's kind of about examining what's my piece of this failing relationship. It's interesting because when it started, it was kind of like a, you know, I'm trying to save this, and trying to say, you know, this is how I feel and this is what I think. And it just kind of, you know, because I could do a cover of a song. I could sing you somebody else's song, but this is what I have to say, you know. And once the relationship ended, that's when the bridge and stuff came, and it actually just changed a little bit. We did a different chorus, and the original chorus is the last one, which is, you know, saying, you know, with you gone, you know, write that down. So it's been interesting because it's about just I'm trying to find my voice and trying to find what to say, communicate how I feel, which I think a lot of men aren't good at.
Right.
So a lot of guys go, hey man, that tune, you know, yeah.
Well, you know. Are you by nature, because of the writing I've heard of what you've done, are you by nature, would you classify yourself as a romantic? Are you one of those just romantic guys that just, you know, you live in the past, in the 40s romance era?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think those offer some of the best songs that are timeless, or those that are drawn from broken hearts.
Well, and I think people, I mean, even if you're, like, when I think about the time when I was in the military and working as a military police officer, it was very much a time of suck it up, keep pushing, deal with it later. Mm-hmm. You know, the job's got to get done. And it doesn't leave you a lot of time to figure out how you feel, especially when you're a young man. And everyone else is dealing with that kind of concept as well. So it's almost like and I mean, I read a lot too, like Charles Bukowski. Like he has a poem called "Bluebird." Mm-hmm. There's a bluebird in my heart that no one knows is there but me, and those kind of things like really resonate for that time. So it's kind of like I would write little things down where no one can see it, you know. And it's just kind of my private thing to try to deal with what I'm going through. And now it's really great that I can have a vehicle to just kind of let it out and express things. And
so do you take those notes from those journals of years ago and work with them now to kind of remember what you were feeling when you were feeling it?
I don't actually have the journals per se, but
okay.
Sometimes I do kind of go back and vibe in that time frame. You know, most of that is like, it's kind of just over, you know, so now, but it's kind of like the lessons learned of that time, you know, so and just saying, you know, well, this is how that was, and we don't want that to be that way again.
With the new songs, are you collaborating, or are these strictly Jamie Harrison songs?
These are just me, and then, you know, of course, I'll run them by Dad and see what he thinks. And, you know, he might say things like, well, you know, this is good. You know, maybe this phrasing on this, you know, I like the concept, but the phrasing on this, you know, batch of words might, you know, maybe look at that and say that a different way or, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. But it's really, you know, all of it's me, and then might be some, and honestly, actually, a couple of those last songs, it was more just like, hey, how are we going to produce it, like, production-wise, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, structure or something like that. So
once the album's out, hopefully before the end of this year, what's the game plan? Are you going to try to tour, or how are you going to market this? How are you going to get the songs out there?
I certainly would love to tour. I think it's going to depend on what people say, you know, how people are reacting to it. I mean, I definitely believe in the music, and it's been interesting to see from when I left service to kind of come back to music full time, and see the people that were there on a restaurant patio hearing me, you know, hack through some songs that I had loosely written, or, you know, some cover songs. And the people who've been there all the way along, and new folks who've kind of come in the middle of the journey, you know, and every step along the way, it's been really cool to see who's been supportive, and that just means the world, because it's, you know.
It seems like there's a lot of venues now that are open to the up-and-coming artists. Mm-hmm. The era of sheds and arenas, I don't want to say has come to an end, but there's a handful that can still fill those. We're seeing more independent breweries, coffee house style clubs, where you're getting the Robbie Fulks and the people like that who have a few albums under their belt, but they can't fill a giant theater. But they're making a living. The Dan Navarros, I mean, they're out there. They're touring nonstop, and they're making a living, and they're selling their music. Is that something you would like to do? I mean, you mentioned you're not home very often anyway. Is it something that you would like to travel and see America and maybe see the world?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I still do sideman work, of course. Mm-hmm. So there's different people who take me on the road doing that stuff, and it's a different thing. I mean, even this collection of shows and clinics, and that is kind of the first time coming out as me. Mm-hmm. You know, no stranger to touring on a truck or a bus or you know, fly dates or any of that stuff, but doing it as you is a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting and, you know, a little scary, but you know, all the infrastructure stuff is there, you know, so it's been awesome to do it, and I want to keep doing it, absolutely.
Okay. So there is a little trepidation. Even though you've got all these hours and miles under your belt, you were always there doing someone else's music, and the pressure was on them. You were just there to make them sound good. Now it's all on you.
Yeah, and I mean, even coming in with just an acoustic guitar is like, you know, that's when you start doing shows that way, it's like, well, break a string if you
what do you do in a case like that? I mean, obviously you probably carry two or three guitars with you, but they're tuned different, so what happens if you break a string or something god awful happens?
I mean, you know, in a perfect world you'd have more than one guitar, you just switch, or, you know, if it's an acoustic thing, you know, more intimate, you can always just make a joke out of it and then mm-hmm. just switch guitars and start over. People are usually pretty forgiving on that stuff, or you have a guitar tech or something, but you know, you try to plan for that and come out with fresh strength. And thankfully, I've studied with some people who, when I was younger, had I broken a string, oh God, my whole world is over.
Right.
But now I can just, you know, just play
shift or, down a little bit. Yeah.
Well, yeah, just move wherever you got, you know, because you can do chords here, you know, it doesn't matter. And
so you can get by with four strings instead of six.
If you have to, you could probably get by with two. Yeah.
It's like a ukulele then.
Just play bass, right?
Yeah. There you go. We were talking about how early on, 3-4 years old, Jim, your dad, was your mentor and your teacher, and your musical world evolved around him. Now, you've been on your own a number of years. Who have been some of the other influential people on your persona as an artist that have taught you, that you've watched, whether it was direct instruction or just something that you observed that you have taken away that you have applied to your mantra of, okay, this is what I need to do?
There's been a lot of folks. I mean, one of my teachers is Michael Anthony. He's a Wrecking Crew guitarist. He played on the Carol Burnett Show, and his wife was a dancer on the Carol Burnett Show. And he's got a series of books that you can buy online. Major jazz cat, you know, he says stuff like, you know, Joe Pass showed me this, and then he shows me, you know, or, oh yeah, when we used to do sessions with Glenn Campbell, you know, we do this kind of a thing. And, like my arrangement, by the time I get to Phoenix, I do, he helped me, like, well, Glenn would play it kind of like this, you know, which wasn't the chords I was going to try to pick, you know.
Right.
He said, you know, this is how you do this. You know, a real jazz guy is going to do this. A pop jazz guy would do this. So if you're in a pop situation, do this, you know. So Uncle Mike has been amazing in really helping me with just vibe and licks and tricks and the tasty stuff that, you know, the older guys know. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, because he's played with Sinatra, Miles Davis, Andy Williams, you know, wow. Theme from Mahogany, All that kind of – he was the Flintstones guitar player. Yeah, so Uncle Mike has been incredible. My friend Larry Mitchell, who's – you know, he came up in that kind of shred world of Steve Vai, Eric Johnson. He's just a monster guitarist, Grammy Award winner. I want to get you guys linked up too because I think he'd be really good for this. But Larry is a tech guy. And he had, like, the whole looper thing with the amp, he really opened my eyes to that stuff. So even some of these shows have been somewhat inspired by what, you know, I've seen him do and just conversations we've had about gear and, you know, of course, Dad and a friend of mine, Gary Cook, who's worked with Sting and Joni Mitchell. He opened up a lot of things on guitar for me that took me from being pretty good to like the next level.
So are these things now, because it sounds like it's almost like a tribal thing where the elders pass down the knowledge and tell the stories. Is this something that you are now finding yourself with younger talent when you do these clinics and saying, try it this way, kid? Is it something that you're passing that legacy on that Joe Pass maybe originated?
Yeah. I mean, if somebody – something that I don't try to do is – you know, if people don't want to listen, don't force it down their throat, you know. And I've been that guy, too. Like, hey, I know what I'm doing, you know. I think we've all been immature in that way.
Right.
You know, but it's been really great to learn from awesome people. And there have been some folks that have said, hey, how do you do that? And I absolutely really enjoy people that want to learn, being able to help them with that.
It seems like that paying forward kind of thing is a responsibility all musicians have. I remember Rick Derringer telling me back in, God, it had to be 1979, 1980. I said, man, you're like at the, it was, he was at the peak. I mean, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo was everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I says, you know, you, man, you're the best. And he goes, I am far from the best. He goes, there's a guy playing down the street in his basement right now that's going to blow me away in a year. And he goes, the thing I learned is every time you meet a guitar player, if I'm a guitar player, every time I meet a guitar player, I say, show me something. And he goes, and I'll be happy to show you something back. And he says, you never stop learning as a musician. That was the first time I heard that. Because I thought, you get to a certain level, you know, you've got hit records, you got Grammys, you don't need to get any better. Well, I guess that's wrong.
Well, Chet Atkins was like,
they said
right
picker.
They said like right before he died, he was playing with distortion pedals and all this stuff. Wow. And you're like, what? Like, because you hear him play acoustic,
right?
You know, as he gets older. But yeah, he was into all. I mean, you know, he was hanging out with Mark Knopfler, and they would do these acoustic things that were amazing. But you know, you hear Money for Nothing with the fuzz pedals and all that stuff. You know,
wow. Now some of these old guys you're mentioning, I should say old. I'm right there. The Roy Clarks, the Glenn Campbells, the people like that you don't often think of. You know, you always think of the Hendrix and the Eric Johnsons and the Vais and Satrianis. But those guys were the real deal, and they did a lot of it without the tech, without the pedals and things.
Right.
You play Glenn Campbell songs.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do us the honor of playing one? You did at the Record Bin. Could you do it today here?
I think so, yeah.
Let's try it. To put you on the spot. I know that wasn't something you planned, but when you brought it up, I remember that was one of the songs that blew people away at the Record Bin. And I just think you did a remarkable job. And that was shortly after Glenn had passed when you were there. So you did kind of a tribute to him. So let's see if we can get you to even give us some of it.
Sure, sure.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She probably found the note on her door. And she'll laugh when she reads the part. Says I'm leaving, yeah. 'Cause I've left that girl so many times before. By the time I make Albuquerque, she'll be working. She'll probably stop at lunch, give me a call, and she'll just do that phone, keep on ringing off the wall. Hey, that's all. By the time I make Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll whisper way out low, call my name. And she'll cry just to think I'd really leave. Though time and time I tried to tell her so, she just didn't know I'd really go.
And Campbell.
All right. Excellent stuff, man. I love it. Glenn Campbell, again, another great talent that we've lost. We have lost so many in recent years of all genres. David Bowie, Prince, Glenn Campbell, Roy Clark, all these guys have shuffled off the mortal coil. You are working with a new generation of players. As someone who grew up in the music business with a lot of the old school influences, what do you think of today's music? Not necessarily what you're making, but the general, what's popular today?
You know, it's really interesting to find why things work. I kind of like the puzzle of it, even if I don't necessarily resonate with, like, when I was younger, I never had an appreciation for country. I mean, I always like people like Johnny Cash, and, mm-hmm. and I think that transcends more than just country, especially because country turned its back on him.
Right.
But... you know, things like that were different, but it was just, I just didn't get it kind of at one point. And then when I got better at guitar, I was like, well, this is really fun to, you know, play those kind of licks.
Is that like a Luther Perkins thing? Because that was his trio.
Yeah, a lot of people did, you know, even would do, you know, Mystery Train kind of stuff, you know. And those are just fun licks, you know, the flat picking stuff. You know, so you can find why things, you know, and when you're playing to a packed club, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know, you're like, this is just awesome, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of country, I like the storytelling in country music.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's and it's one of the places you hear lots of guitar solos still, whereas rock music and pop music has gotten away from some of that. But yeah, I mean, I think there's things that are good and bad about every type of music. Technology is just really cool and really fun right now, so a lot of stuff is relying on that. But as record labels are failing, people are having to play live again.
Mm-hmm.
So people like me get called because we're experienced and can do it versus, you know, someone who has to try to figure it out now. You know, there's been stories of some of these pop bands that can't even, you know, do that on time. You know, they
right.
have to assemble it in the studio, or somebody else is doing it, and then they learn the record live. And, you know, it I'm not against it necessarily. I would hope it wouldn't be that way, but, you know, people are having to play again.
Right.
Which is good. You know.
Keep up with Jamie at jamiemharrison.com. There's all sorts of fun stuff here. A lot of his history is here. There's some great photos. There's also endorsements. Let's talk about endorsements. You're talking about tech, and we've talked a little bit that you're going to be here doing clinics for Bose at some of the guitar centers. Who are some of the instruments and microphones and other things in the business that are believing in you enough to give you endorsements?
So, man, there's a bunch of folks that I work with, and even if it's not a, you know, a lot of these are friends too, and it's kind of like I believe in your product and they believe in me. Iconic Guitars, who makes, I have three really cool custom guitars from them. Two of them are purple flame maple caps, so you can see the tiger flame kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is purple sparkle, which I love. Jody Head Straps, which I'm wearing one now. She does a lot of really cool purple stuff. Lots, you know, conchas, all that kind of stuff. Mahalo amps, Wampler pedals, Keeley pedals. That Purple Rain, you know, I had, I think, 6 or 7 Keeley pedals going on that one to make all that guitar stuff shimmer and sparkle and all that. Mahalo amps, Graftech parts, David Allen pickups, Headrush, who makes the pedal board that I'm using on this tour, you know. Those kind of folks, Intex cables, and all these people are exceptional at what they do. It's not just about, hey, this is good on a resume or something,
right.
You know.
So these are products you really believe in and use.
Yeah.
Because you like them, not just because they're giving you a free pedal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, for the most part, even when I'm talking to someone about stuff we're doing, none of it is – I mean, some of these companies have given free things, but it's not typically done that way, and I don't want it to be done that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really about I believe in the product line. You know, Eastman Guitars is a great company who makes acoustics and hollow bodies, and on my record, you know, you're going to hear some amazing acoustic guitars from Eastman, and you're going to, you know, when I play hollow bodies, like a 335. I have a Gibson 335, but most of the time I take the Eastman out because
right.
it looks cooler and, you know, their stuff, you know, I believe in them. You know?
The young thing, we were talking about how the younger generation is learning to play again and all this stuff. And the indie scene, your record labels are dying, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's kind of doing their own thing. We're uploading singles. You're re-releasing stuff even on vinyl and CD on your own imprints. You're recording in home studios. So the old days are pretty much dinosaurs. They're gone. But I'm seeing that on the behind the scenes, too. A lot of the companies you're mentioning are kind of startup companies. These are young folks that say, hey, I got a great idea for a guitar, or I came up with a great idea for a new pedal. Locally here in Northwest Indiana, we got Steve Crabtree, who is doing his drums. And I just met a guy last night, Jim Huber, who actually designs sticks here in the area. And he's got these cool grips that I guess they're sized to your hands, so you don't have to duct tape them and do things. So we've got all these open-minded, these free thinkers that are coming up with things. And today's world is embracing the small guy, the upstart company. So a lot of the stuff you're mentioning, I think, is kind of that nature, isn't it? Like the strap company.
Yeah. You know, and some of these, I mean, it's interesting because when you think of what's small, it's like there's some of these people who, yeah, it's they have an office building and they're supplying, you know, Guitar Center with, you know, 1,000 pedals or something to mm-hmm. go across 260 stores or something, you know, which means like what, you know, 3, 4, or 5 pedals a store
per store.
You know,
yeah.
You know, so it's,
I mean,
not
it's
a,
big, but it's not huge.
Yeah. And then, you know, I have friends, I use a lot of Boss pedals too, which, you know, Boss is the biggest.
Yeah. They've been around forever.
Yeah. And they're innovative again. You know, I don't know that they were ever not innovative, but, you know, we think of the classic lineup that they have and they're doing new stuff, taking on some of these really big boutique companies with, you know, they have the highest fidelity pedal at 32-bit right now, mm-hmm. where it was 24 before. So, I like innovation. I like companies that will – John Pierce Strings, for example, they – you know, we go and hang out at NAMM, which is where all
you
the
new – You do a lot of NAMM stuff.
Yeah. That's where all the new products get debuted. And, the you know, these guys are friends. You know, we hang out and, you know, we'll go have dinner. You know, and then we go, oh, wait, let's talk business real quick. Like,
right.
Like as we're running out the door, like, you know, so it's great to have people that you believe in their product and it helps. I mean, you know, this guitar has those John Pierce strings on it right now because they sound good, mm-hmm. you know, and
they haven't broken.
They haven't broken. Yeah. Despite my best efforts.
All right, we're talking with Jamie Harrison. He is in town for about 4 weeks. He'll be doing some Guitar Center clinics. We'll rehash those in just a moment. Want to remind you tomorrow, if you're listening right now in the Northwest Indiana, Chicago, Michigan area, or streaming wherever you may be streaming, he'll be at the Acorn Theater, a beautiful venue in Three Oaks, Michigan, right next to the Journeyman Distillery in a quaint little artesian town, a very bohemian kind of setting there. He'll be there with M&R Rush. And again, showtime 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's an hour after us here in Northwest Indiana. So if it's 7:30 start time Eastern, it'll be 6:30 here. So leave work or whatever you're doing early. Make sure you get there. Don't miss Jamie. He'll be doing about 35 minutes of his stuff before M&R comes on, does their show. You can also catch Jamie at the Highland Music and Markets events. He'll be there from 5 to 6:15, June 22nd with the Uptown Dance Band. So bring your dancing shoes, and I'm sure you'll play Purple Rain for them. Kind of warm them up with that. Also, July 4th, Independence Day, back at Highland, but this time for the Highland 4th of July Fest, and it'll be a blues day with James Geddit, Jack Whittle on the bill, Joseph Mojo Morganfield and the Manish Boys, Bridget Rios Purdy, who has been a guest on the show many times, coming in from L.A., her first time playing Midwest, and Corey Dennison Blues Duo will be there. And then July 6th, Jamie will be with the Mr. Funny Man Band, and that will be at Crown Point's beautiful new Bulldog Park. We did our first show there last night with Dave Rudolph and Bill Hayden Group, and I'll tell you, it was remarkable. They got AstroTurf. They got this beautiful pavilion with all these multicolored lights, a giant screen. There was a car show there last night. I mean, it's an amazing facility, and I just got to, again, give props to Mayor David Uran and his staff for creating this beautiful new venue. As the Star Plaza Theater went to the wayside and we lost it, a lot of young free-thinking minds are coming along and giving us new venues. Munster Performing Arts Center has stepped up. The Art Theater has stepped up. The Crown Theater is going to be opening soon with live talent, and now we've got this beautiful facility here. So lots of places to replace. Nothing will actually replace Star Plaza, at least not in my heart, but there's a lot of places there that are stepping up to fill the void, and Jamie's going to be putting his fingerprints on a few of them. Now, the Guitar Center ones, give us those dates again.
Yeah, those will be June 21st at Guitar Center Villa Park, 5 p.m., June 28th, Guitar Center Naperville, 5 p.m., June 29th, my old store of Hobart, Indiana, 1 p.m.
Wow, good stuff. And, of course, this Sunday, at U.S. 30, no, at the Record Bin in downtown Hobart, right there at 218 Main Street. We'll have the back room going. We'll be broadcasting him on the Internet. A very quaint little room, getting littler by the day. We've got some more stock in the back now. So we've displaced a few bodies, but we can still do about 20, 22 people back there. And it's a wonderful little acoustic / electric performance. You'll be there on your own for that. It'll be just you like last time, right?
Yeah.
That means we can squeeze an extra body in there. So come on down and join us. That is all free, and that's from 4 to 6 at the Record Bin in downtown Hobart Sunday. So you get to see a full concert there. These other ones are more or less support acts. That's 90 minutes of Jamie and all Jamie.
Wow.
So you got a challenge there. So, well, we've got about, 15 minutes left? About 15 minutes. So what have we not talked about that you want to let people know?
I mean, there's lots of just crazy things that are coming up, and we're really, the biggest thing right now is just trying to finish the album.
Okay.
Because that's going to kind of dictate the future.
How are you doing that with all these dates? You've got these Guitar Center shows. I've just listed four or five other ones. You're only here 4 weeks. How are you going to finish the album while touring all over the Midwest here?
Well, pretty much every day that I'm not touring, I'm in the Thunderclap Studios.
Okay.
So we'll be hanging out with John, and thankfully John's really good. So
he's made the schedule flexible for you.
We booked it all around all these dates. So, that's exciting because, you know, if you're sitting around doing nothing, then you kind of lose momentum. So mm-hmm. just what's great is that I'll be singing the songs that we're going to track live right around there. So if there's any new instinct of what a song should have, it's all going to be there. You know, when you write songs and they're just kind of in the bedroom, like they haven't matured yet. Sting's whole new album, what is it called? My Songs.
Mm-hmm.
His whole concept is, you know, you don't get to know the songs until they've been around, you know. So these are like re-records of everything with different things that he wanted to try. So thankfully, because I've been working so much, whether it's touring or, you know, since I started the record, I've been to, you know, Puerto Rico, L.A., Colorado, now the Midwest, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan. So there's been a lot of life on these songs before they were actually finished.
So do you try them different ways just to see how they work at different shows? You say, well, I'm going to try putting more of a country spin on this or maybe a little blues spin on that just to see how the sound reacts to it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, like with the Boss pedals, like I was telling you about, the innovative stuff, they have some really cool delay pedals and that, and I'll sit and play some of these with, you know, just crazy U2 Edge effects,
mm-hmm.
and just see how one man and the Edge sounds, you know, and it's pretty cool. And I don't know that I would actually cut it that way, but on the right show, you know, you hear that a lot. People do a one-off version that's just really fun, you know.
How have fans reacted to your original music? I mean, you're just getting them out there now. What kind of response have you gotten? What kind of feedback vibe?
I think a lot of, because when I'm doing the guitar show or even the piano show, it's a lot of times it's about really technical stuff, whether it's guitar or keyboards, you know, ambient textures, shred guitar, really high energy stuff. So then when I come out and do like a ballad, and it's like a really tender, heartfelt kind of thing, then people are like, wow, that's just not what I would have expected.
Mm-hmm. In a good way?
But we really love it.
Okay,
yeah.
I was just saying.
And then, you know, some of the, like, Devil's Kiss and stuff, when we've done that with the band, people are just dancing. What is this? Like, this feels good. You know,
yeah.
So that's been really fun that it's all been positive. There hasn't been any negative at all, which is rare.
You were mentioning that even though you started out on piano, you prefer the guitar now, and you still play both. Let me throw this at you. You play both electric and acoustic. Is there a certain reason you like either or more?
I don't know that it's I like guitar more. I think it's kind of like left brain, right brain. It's like
okay.
if I get to play something really challenging, I love piano. If it's the aesthetic I want, then, you know, like maybe I'll write that down. I never vibe with it the same on a guitar as I do on the piano. Acoustic, there's something really fun about just strumming. I mean, that just feels good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's guttural, and it's kind of like an extension of you, whereas the piano, I kind of feel almost like a technician, like I'm coming up to the console and you know, doing the you know, the scientific thing.
Right.
And you know, if I have to play something super simple, I almost feel bored, you know. But,
right.
Which I hate saying, but that's the challenge, too, is how do you approach something that maybe isn't the funnest thing to do and still do it really well and still sell it and still give it the reverence it deserves. You know, so that's part of getting hired too.
Okay. Well, the electric guitar, you have all the technology that can support it. And I know there's some technology with acoustic, but it's more naked. It's more raw. Other than adding a little reverb or something, you really don't mess with the acoustic sound, do you?
No. I mean, you can add chorus and those kind of things, but it's really just, you know, if you've got a good acoustic, it sounds great as is.
So are you going to play more acoustic or more electric at these shows?
I'm probably going to just see what the vibe is.
Okay. So you're ready for anything. You're coming with a full armament of.
And I try not to over practice ahead of time because I want the spontaneity in the moment.
Okay.
So every show is really completely unique. Because if you just over practice something to death, it feels, you know, like it's not authentic. It doesn't feel like, you know, like here's the move. I'm gonna kick the piano. You know.
Is there another song you can play for us before we say goodbye?
Sure.
Is this another new original?
I play an old original.
Okay.
A really old original. This is actually the first song I ever wrote.
Well, all right.
The first one I say I wrote. My mom will say I wrote one called Chicken Noodle Soup.
But we'll have to dig that one out someday.
I hope there's no recording of that.
I bet your dad had the tape rolling.
He's like, I have it transcribed.
There
it's
you
right
go.
Here. Play it. Yeah.
JVM Harrison, and what's the name of this one?
Raven's Pearl.
All right, check it out.
A star in the sky, flying away to my room, where I'll wait forever. Raven's pearl never shines so bright, never dims or fades with the light in me. I know there's too much to tell in one night, so I will wait forever. In a dream I saw you there, tyrannizing teddy bear, which you hold in your sorrow. Fears all you know, but you know I'll do anything. Damn me to hell, and I'll go for one rose to place in your hand as my love fades never. Raven's pearl never shines so bright, never dims or fades with the light in me. I know there's too much to tell in one night, so I will wait forever.
How old is that song?
I would have been in high school, so wow. maybe 15 years.
That's a little dark. I like it. I like it. It's
brooding,
very,
right?
Yeah, it's very brooding. It's very sparse, I guess you'd say. Minimalistic in some ways.
Yeah, I had this really weird recording. Like, I had a digital 4-track or like an 8-track somewhere, and I used a drum machine. I put like distortion on the voice and all this weird stuff, and it was almost like Marilyn Manson-y or something.
I was going to say, it's kind of like Marilyn Manson acoustic. Interesting stuff.
It's like a Bukowski poem, right?
Yeah, there you go. You know, he just put an album out, or I should say they just put an album of his stuff out.
Really?
Our friend at the bookstore has had a bunch of them. I don't know if he's got any left over at Green Door Books next to the record bin. When you're there Sunday, I'll have to see if I can get you a copy of that.
Yeah,
if you still got
if
one.
If anything, I need to like just find it. So
yeah,
can...
very, very cool. They had a Charles party there. So yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff. Jamie M. Harrison is our guest, and we are just about out of time. We have about 3 minutes left, so let's reiterate once again. You can see him tomorrow night at the Acorn Theater, the beautiful Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan, right next to the distillery there. And Three Oaks is wine country. It's a very artesian. There's resale stores and little pubs and all kinds of fun stuff to do there. So make a day of it. It's right there in the I don't want to say it's a tourist town, but it kind of is in the summer. There's the marina there. So stop on out. See M&R Rush and Jamie M. Harrison at the Acorn tomorrow. Catch them on June 22nd at the Highland Music and Market. That is a Saturday with the Uptown Dance Band. Catch them again July 4th in Highland at the 4th of July Festival. He'll be doing starting off early that day on the 4th of July, so you can still get home to see all your fireworks. And July 6th, final date that I know of, public performances anyway, Crown Point Bulldog Park, beautiful facility. If you haven't been there yet, you have to go. It's gorgeous, and the sound is going to be perfect. Jerry Stickle providing sound. It was just awesome yesterday, and of course, three different places at Guitar Centers. How long do those clinics last generally, and what time are those?
You know, it depends on how many people we've got. I mean, you know, it can be 4 hours if we need it. If there's not people, then we don't go that long. The 21st, 5 p.m., Villa Park. 28th, Naperville, 5 p.m. 29th, Hobart, 1 p.m. And those are all free. So you can just walk in, hang out. We're going to be talking bows. We'll talk about any other gear you want to know about that I work with. If you want to ask me guitar questions, just ask me about my music, whatever. Buy some strings at Guitar Center. I'm sure they'll be excited.
They would love that.
That.
Yeah. All right. JamieMHarrison.com is where you can check it out. Jose, how much time we got?
About two minutes.
So let's take it out. Let's play something from M&R Rush. We can do Between the Lines, and this is their new single, and they will be there tomorrow. Jamie's going to be opening for M&R, so here they are. Adios, everybody. I'll catch you on Tuesday. Till then, stay safe. We'll see you over the weekend. Read between the lines.
the answers. Don't stop living for the day. Don't stop.